the very kind remarks. Thank you all for having me here. I would like to correct some of the record there. I think, first of all, you have to reserve judgment until I've voted a few times before you find out if you're delighted to have me in Washington or not. Remember our friend Charlie Goodell. I do represent the whole state of New York. And also, I think it would have been more accurate to state that I enlisted in the Navy before I completed Yale in order to be able to complete Yale. Those were the conditions in World War II. And also, as far as my credentials with conservation societies after a vote a few days ago, I'm not sure how strong they are. But I would like to point out to the conservationists that they won a Pyrrhic victory in my estimation, because they're not going to stop SSTs, and we don't have the evidence by which to judge whether SSTs ought to be stopped. But in any event, I'm not here to talk about my vote such as it is, but to say that I am awed to find myself in a room filled with such a high voltage of conservative wisdom, and I really think it's impertinent of me to preempt so much of your time when you get together so rarely. But nevertheless, I am delighted to be here. I hope that a useful function can be served, and I'm serious about that, because it gives me an opportunity to explain some of the problems which I face as a conservative who has found his way into the halls of Congress, and to perhaps suggest ways in which you can help me be more effective. You, after all, are the eggheads, or if you would prefer, the philosophers of the conservative movement. And I find myself in a position to help translate your analyses and your insights into public policy. But if so, I think we have to understand one another's roles and limitations and see how we can work together to achieve our common goals. Of course, I'm not speaking just for myself in this respect, but all of us in Congress who are sympathetic to the conservative position, but who need help in elaborating that position. I think I can best spotlight my dilemma as one legislator seeking positive alternatives to the liberal fantasies that are thrown into our public stream. And incidentally, in this area, I think it is most important to recognize that we are never going to really make inroads with the public. We're never going to get to a position where we can accomplish great things until we go beyond voting against things. I know this is a cliche, but it's one which is based on a felt necessity. There are alternatives that have to be advanced, and I, for one, am searching for those alternatives. But I think you can best see the problem I face when I describe my attempts last summer to prepare myself for the tilting at those liberal windmills, when I sought to sift from the springs of conservative wisdom. I attended, for example, a Robert Schuchman Foundation symposium built around the theme of private alternatives to public programs. There were in attendance a galaxy which included Messrs. Friedman and Banfield and Brosen and Van der Hoog and others. And there were others who were positively intimidating in their virtuosity. For 2 days, they ping-ponged brilliant insights back and forth into every area of human concern: education, housing, taxation, transit, health, pollution, welfare, the works. And then, in the wrap-up session, they all sat back and agreed that although between them they held the key to the world as it ought to be, it would be outrageous to assume that any of their proposals could ever be enacted. Following that exposure, I delved into that brilliant book by Professor Banfield, The Unheavenly City. My mind was exercised, my perceptions were sharpened, and I raced to that last chapter where he set forth a half dozen proposals for the solution of our urban problems, after which he concluded with the observation that anybody in political office who sought to even hint at any one of these was consigning himself to outer darkness. So in any event, I emerged from my homework rather stimulated, intellectually, and enlightened, but having made no progress whatsoever in developing a programmatic counterattack for the coming campaign. But more, I thought I detected in my mentors a positive delight in their assumption that nothing sensible could in this world ever be accomplished. But being a congenital optimist, if an intellectual pessimist, I nevertheless survived this attack on my sensibilities, this envelope of negativism, and I did manage to sneak one off in the campaign. And I hope that in this small way, I have been able to demonstrate that this country is not lost, that there is, in fact, some hope for the Republic. Because I think my election was possible only because enough Americans are concerned enough today, enough Americans have concluded that the liberal nostrums of the past 30 years have proven to be failures, enough Americans are listening for new ideas and sound ideas to be receptive to the conservative viewpoint, especially as there is that still remaining, that deep well of common sense, which has always characterized Americans. But we must keep in mind that we cannot overnight bring the public to abandon habits of thought, assumptions, and institutions which have been cultivated for more than a generation. We conservatives, therefore, must understand that if we are going to have a practical impact on the public events, we are going to have to move gradually, step by step, patiently, by proposing plausible programs, politically workable programs, which will gradually inch us towards our goals. And I'd like to suggest some ways in which you can contribute to this task, and some ways in which you can focus your great insights on that task. First of all, I urge you to put into your equations the political realities, because for better or worse, people have come to expect certain services from government and for government to assume certain responsibilities. Therefore, our ends will not be met by coming up with another dozen beautiful arguments as to why these services should never have been tendered in the first place, but rather, we should find ways of defusing them, find ways in which we can make them less intrusive, find ways in which we can cut back the arbitrary nature of governmental intervention, find ways in which we can lessen public reliance on these programs, and in this way, perhaps, ultimately, chart the course when they can be dispensed with. We must also recognize that there are some developments which are inevitable, whether we like them or not. And if we recognize this fact, then we will know that sheer resistance is futile and that we had better focus our energies and our brain power into channeling these irresistible forces into areas where the least harm will be done and where possibly there will be some positive good. I'd like to suggest that one of these inevitabilities is a great strengthening of the federal role in the whole area of health. We are going to have something we do not like unless we come up with something that we can live with. And I would suggest that there might be such areas. I think, for example, that we must recognize that the process of private insurance is not broad enough, that there are people who are willing to pay for insurance who cannot find policies. I could see a federal role which would make it possible for each one of us to buy insurance, that would enable us to foresee every catastrophe that can be visited upon our families, or most of them anyway, and that such a federal role would not necessarily bring with it federal payments for the insurance, or, for example, a federal mandate telling us we have to buy that insurance. I'm just sketching here. Another area is one having to do with the mass transit. This is something that the people will be demanding, and it is up to us to try to think through the mechanisms which, as a practical manner, can bring to focus the resources and the intelligence, hopefully, and I think necessarily in the private sector. But if we don't come up with those ideas, then someone is going to do it in the public sector. And so it goes. But I think that you must recognize the limitations which a man like I has. I don't have the resources. I'm not provided with the money to muster the staff. I've got some in tremendously bright people working for me, but there are financial limitations to how many I can have. And I'd like to ask all of you who are interested here to volunteer for a brain trust. If you are willing to put in serious thought, to take on serious assignments, and impose serious deadlines on yourselves. I know this is asking a great deal, but it can be enormously helpful to me and to others in the Congress in spreading our ability to guard all the bases and to come up with an intelligent critique. I would like to suggest that if any of you would like to help me in this way, that you contact Mike Uhlman of my staff. I think he's known to most of you. But there's something more that is needed and that is beyond the capacity of any of us here today. And that is that we urgently need some kind of institution, some kind of a foundation, which is well-financed, well-staffed, which could be the conservative equivalent of the Brookings Institute. There are occasions, there are problems, there are tasks which cannot be solved, which cannot be coped with the resources available to even minority members, senior minority members of the Congress, let alone a freshman. We need to be able to delegate a problem and have the intensive attention paid to it, the tens of thousands of dollars spent in detailed research and in coming up with legislative proposals. I judge from Henry's remarks that none of you know any fairy godfathers. But if you do, for heaven's sake, tell them that this is one of the most important areas, one of the most important services that people with capital can perform today. And I couldn't be more serious about this one. Let me just sketch the kind of problem, for example, that such a facility could attack, namely an analysis of the health problem in this country, a counter-proposal to the Kennedy proposal. Another one in the field of pollution. I've discussed with Frank Meyer a number of times the idea of enacting tax credits and tax incentives in order to encourage industry to cope with this whole technology of recycling. It's the only ultimate way out of pollution. But this is a highly complex piece of legislation. It requires very careful analysis of a number of industries. I can't do it alone. I'm trying to get help now. But if there were that conservative Brookings Institute, it could be something that in the public interest could be focused upon, and something constructive could be generated to be introduced by the conservative element in the Congress. And in that way, to help not only achieve something sensible, but also to start educating the public to the very real fact that we have something positive to say. Finally, I want to urge on you to recognize the practical political limitations of which circumscribe that which is possible in terms of action now in the political world. We here pride ourselves on the fact that we understand reality and on the fact that the principles which guide us are grounded on the realities of human nature. We must not lose fact, however, that we must work within the here and now, and that among the most important realities with which we must cope are the political realities. This is the specific arena, of course, within which I must operate, and it does mean that I must time and again use a purely pragmatic judgment as to whether a particular measure, and no matter how intellectually sound it might be, has a chance, whether a compromise is necessary, whether a package which has some features that are detestable ought nevertheless to be enacted because there are other features which, in my estimation, would carry us a little bit in the direction we want to go in. But I think we must also understand that it is the happy circumstance of politics that whereas we can do nothing to change the realities of human nature, we can do a great deal to change and condition the climate which defines what at any given point is politically realistic. Now, this requires a great deal of persuasiveness, an infinite patience, an ability to reach out and talk to people, to get the attention of the public. And here's where I believe that those of you in this room can make a most important contribution. If you will shift a portion of your time and effort from the examination of the ideal, from the examination of the faults in our present structure, if you can devote some of your great energies and talents towards helping chart the specific steps by which we can move closer to our ideal, if you will reach out in the popular press towards the public, who, after all, in the last analysis, define what is possible in the political arena, then I believe that we will be making the kind of progress which is essential if we are to save this country. And what I'm urging, in other words, is that you make a concerted effort at political advocacy. And who knows, if you do, perhaps at some future symposium sponsored by the Robert Schuchman Foundation, you will find yourselves distilling intellectual geritol, not hemlock, for future politicians. Thank you.